Welcome to ShollyCast, the podcast all about Lolly and Shota, including Not Safe for Work. ShollyCast is hosted by me, Hydro, and Dr. X. We're the developers of Insexual Awakening, a straight Shota visual novel game with incest, lollies, MILFs, onesans, and even a femboy character if you play Insexual Awakening 2, our sequel. If you'd like to play our games, you can download them at our official Barag at barag.net/cyberhex. And if you'd like to support Insexual Awakening's continued development and this podcast, you can join our Subscribestar at subscribestar.adult/cyberhex. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to ShollyCast, everybody. I'm Hydro with Dr. X. And in this episode, we are joined by DVD, not the object or disc, but the actual person DVD. So tell us a bit about what kind of artwork you create primarily. Like what kind of, what do you like to primarily create either for, different fetishes or topics or different things like that?
Oh, I make lots of different art. I think my followers, maybe they know me for the different types of media I get into. The subject matter that I post on Barag or Pixiv is all related to Lolita and sort of smutty pinup things of that nature. But actually I do have a lot of different type of art, including oil painting, sometimes sculpture, 3D media, and that much of the 3D media actually I do on Barag now too. So actually I've got my hand in a lot of different things.
Oh, cool. Now, which thing did you get into first? Was sculpture first? Was drawing first? What did you start off with?
I've been drawing all of my life. When I was very young, it was cartoons and illustration. Yeah, not surprising. I started drawing girls when I was in my teenage years, when I was maybe 13, 14. I really like this anime thing. I really like how these girls appear. I'm going to learn how to draw girls in the anime style.
Respectable.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty common story, right?
Yes.
But obviously, if you've seen my work, it's only slightly influenced by anime, by common anime styles. I tried to do my own thing. I took an oil painting workshop a long time ago, and I learned quite a bit about oil paint and traditional media, and I think that had a very big influence on me on the type of work that I create and the style I like to use.
So you said that the anime style doesn't have like a huge influencing on the art style you do. Can you name any kind of other artist or other kind of art style that you think had more influence?
That's a good question. So I'm sorry, I'm influenced by the small things. I've never had the notion I should follow an artist and one artist and try to copy them, follow in their footsteps. I like to take bits and pieces of other artists and just sort of combine them together if I can, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, like to make your own style, right?
Yeah, and this is hard to explain because I'm influenced, sure, I'm definitely influenced by all kinds of artists, but I think artists don't really inform my art as much as the things I observe in my life. Just it all kind of blends together and sort of influenced by other people. I'm influenced by architecture. I'm influenced by events that happen to me. I'm a very open person in that regard.
So when did you start drawing Lolly?
I don't really know because it's hard to really define, I think, what is Lolly or what is Jota. But I think when I was like 19 or 20, I don't want to date myself, but it was a long time ago, right? I'm an old man now. But I would draw these forms like sort of about like nymph forms, sort of childlike forms. And that was kind of stimulating. Obviously, I think drawing tits and dick that's stimulating as well, but there's something about the child or like the nymph form or the, how was to put up the Lolita form that I also found very stimulating. And so, yeah, I've been doing it a long time, I guess. But yeah, it's interesting. How do you define loli or shota? Like, what is the Lolita form? Like, what is the Lolita shape proportion?
Small.
Well, we actually did do an episode on that, yep. Essentially trying to define it. It was mostly in the context of the Western definition of loli and shota. You know, in some other cultures, it might be different, you know, like Japan, for example. But in our opinion, as we see it, a loli is a prepubescent girl, basically. There's a little bit of leeway or wiggle room where they can be maybe like just started puberty or something. But generally speaking, it would be prepubescent.
Right. Yeah. And so it started with Barag in 2020, I think, to 2020. And, you know, I would draw these Lolita characters kind of out of boredom. I didn't really, this is like the very beginning of the COVID thing. I had a lot of time. I was just really like isolated. So I was like, okay, I find it kind of comforting in a strange way. I find it sort of comforting to draw these characters, you know, if it's like sexual or not, or maybe it's suggestive or something like that. Yeah, it's stimulating and fun. And Barag is a kind of, and a kind of an interesting case in itself, right? Because like anything goes there. But I would post on Barag and I get some kind of satisfaction out of it, obviously getting likes and, you know, people with shared interests would follow me. And that was always kind of exciting. And then it just sort of grew, continued to grow over the years, and I got commissions. So again, this was like during pandemic, and I didn't really have anything to do with my time. And I started posting these things on Barag, and yeah, I got a following.
Oh yeah, like as of right now, you have over 6,000 followers. Pretty good.
Yeah, and I look, and this is just, yeah, if you're looking at, yeah, the Fetty or, yeah, and Pixiv together, of course, there's overlap. It's probably all the same people. And as I started, I didn't really know what I was doing. I didn't have a plan for it. You know, this is just my sketch pad, or if you might call it, Barag is sort of my gallery, but I don't take it very seriously at all. However, I mean, people still come to me for commissions, and I'm sorry, commissioners, but I haven't been very diligent lately, and I've kind of turned away a lot of commissions. But you know, it's not because of the commissioners, but it's not you, it's me. Okay, it's not you, it's me. I don't really feel that my heart is in it, and I don't want to make any art if I don't feel very inspired.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that.
Well, that makes sense. You want, like, when you do like fulfill commission, you want to make sure it's the best it can be for the person who's paying you.
Well, there's that, right? And my experience, you know, I've had a lot of great. Actually, I've only had good experiences with commissioners, frankly.
Oh, that's good.
I mean, the way I do it is I'll draw a sketch first, and I'll show them the sketch, and you know, if they like where it's going, then I'll continue to work on it. The thing is, though, I prefer commissioners who are very open-ended, and I don't ask commissioners to pay up front either. So if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, and you know, we don't have to worry about money or it doesn't get too complicated. I say, okay, well, if they continue to ask for changes, I get kind of disinterested. I just say, okay, well, but generally the commissioners who come to me and they say, I just do whatever, just roll the dice, and those ones I often complete, and you know, they're happy with it. But that's just not the kind of work I'd like to be doing. I'd prefer to have a subscription service, and that way it's kind of up to you whether or not you want to jump on the train or just let it pass.
Yeah, looks like you have a fan box.
I do, yeah. That's basically, that's my cash flow. And yeah, you know, I, of course, you know, it isn't for everybody. I have, like you said, I have like 7,000 followers or something like that. And I think it's stupid not to try to sell them something, basically. And I'm going to continue making art. So, you know, why not? Why not open a fan box? Why not open Ko-Fi or Subscribestar or whatever, and try to make a side hustle out of it? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, take advantage of it. Totally, dude. like, don't let it to go to waste. I mean,
because the kind of work I do is sort of esoteric and taboo, right? So the people who follow me are, you know, they're really close with what I do, and they're really supportive of what I do. And I really appreciate that. But it doesn't make any sense, really. It doesn't make any sense to do this. It's crazy, but I'm an artist and I'm crazy. So what do you?
And I do think there actually is a market for it. I actually think it's kind of an untapped market, primarily just because of, you know, the the ability to be able to spread out and to kind of get the word out of your art is a little challenging now, but it's become far better than what it used to be in the past. Like, I mean, there used to be no fan box and there used to be no subscribe star. And you know, for artists that wanted to make Lolly and Shota artwork, it basically was almost impossible to find any like revenue stream that wasn't paying like a large amount of money for your own website and hiring a web developer or figuring it out yourself. And it was a lot more complicated to be able to accomplish it. So I think it's great that you had just started doing this just to get, you know, personal satisfaction and just show other people your art. And then you got commissions for it. And, you know, people want to actually are willing to give you the delicious dollars to be able to, or whatever currency you're using to be able to, you know, say to you, hey, we just want to see more of what you create. And then that's pretty great when you reach that point.
Oh, I get immense satisfaction out of selling artwork. The transaction, it's just very fulfilling, right? To sell something that you've made, something you basically made out of nothing, right? Especially with digital artwork, whether you just like organizing some pixels, right? And that's it, really. And, you know, to transform that into money is pretty fun. And to be honest, many people who meet me, they're like shocked when I explain I'm an illustrator and I'm a painter, and suddenly the room changes and I'm like, oh, you're not the person I thought you were. This is unexpected. Maybe I don't seem like the type. I mean, art is a very, very private thing for me. It's not something I try to wear.
You said you wanted to talk about like some technical aspects to the art. Like what technical things were you interested in kind of telling people who are listening who might be getting into art, or maybe people who might be interested in sculpting or doing like these kind of, because we haven't had anybody on yet who has done like sculpting and I'm assuming you and oil. Well, maybe we had one person who might have mentioned oil painting at some point, but I don't know if they really dabbled into it a whole ton. So what can you tell us like from a technical perspective about that stuff?
Obviously, traditional media is much less forgiving. You don't have as much control, but that's where a lot of the beauty comes from, I think. In the painted image, you have a lot less control than you realize. If you spend a lot of time with digital art, you start to appreciate how much nature comes into effect when you're using traditional media, and how beautiful nature is. And the material itself is very beautiful, and all the physical factors like gravity, light, are going to affect the material in really interesting ways. Yeah, nature is very beautiful. Digital art, you're fighting a computer, basically. You're trying to make it look more natural. You know, computers are very, you know, yes or no. So so often when you're doing digital artwork, you have to work to make your image look natural. And actually, okay, so many people listening also post on Barad or Pixiv or whatever, or are artists themselves. And what I've noticed is very few artists do any kind of post-processing to their artwork. They'll make a sketch, or they'll make a painting, export a JPEG, and then post it on Barad, right? But actually, it comes down to taste and, you know, and also design, right? Design is a really, really important thing to consider, because, you know, the design of the image you post on Barad really has an effect on the way people feel about it. Okay, so when I say post-processing, I mean, for example, chromatic aberration is a very popular one, right? And so, like, if you decide it before posting onto Barad to add a sort of chromatic aberration effect, try it. Go ahead and try it. You'll get a very different reaction out of people, and it's really subtle, but I think it really affects the viewer and the viewer's interpretation, or the way the viewer receives your artwork. So to put a little more care into the way your art is presented, it will make you come off as more professional sometimes, or it'll just add something to your art, which will kind of set you apart and sort of position you away from other artists and draw attention to you. When working the traditional media, I don't do smut at all. If I'm going to make an oil painting, it's not going to be something smutty, because there are reasons for this. I think, namely, you know, you have a, you know, piece of artwork sitting around your house, right?
Okay.
And it's like, do you really want this object in your house all at all times, right? You know, if it's something pornographic, maybe, maybe not, right? And then, you know, when you're using traditional media, you're investing a lot of resources into the creating this object, right? So I don't feel like it's worth it. See, with digital artwork, you know, it doesn't cost anything. It only costs your time, really, to make a JPEG, okay? And I think that's why there's such a massive proliferation of smutty and taboo art, is because it doesn't cost anything to create, right? Artists working with traditional media who stick with traditional media, they don't, you know, they're more disciplined and probably more moralistic people. Now they say, I'm not gonna make this crap, you're right. This media is, the materials are expensive, right? It takes a lot of time and planning to make a painting, an oil painting. And I'm going to make something that's really, really meaningful to me. But with digital art, you know, again, all it costs is your time. So I think people are more willing to explore crazy, taboo subject matter and put it out there.
I saw on your profile at some point that you were making a game called Greenie.
Oh, yeah. I made a visual novel last summer. Oh, yeah. That was a fun project.
Oh, what can you tell us about it?
Oh, I can tell you it involves a commissioner's OC. I kind of like their OC, so I kept drawing her and used characters. And yeah, I've always wanted to make a sort of illustrated story, but comic books are too much work. I felt like visual novel would be a great way to tell a story, you know, with illustrated elements. Yeah, I give it a shot. I stayed up a few nights a week and I wrote this script, and it was a sort of dating sim. And you got these characters, they're in this school, they're in like a Catholic school, and there's this character, Greenie, she's a dip girl. All the characters are sort of gossiping about each other, and then you're introduced to Greenie. Okay, there's this character, Roger, who's showing all of his classmates this porn that's on his phone. This image, I wanted to make a story about this image, about like, it's a little ambiguous what he's showing, what this student is showing the other students of this school. But you're supposed to guess that he's got a picture of your cock and he's like showing all the girls pictures. That's like a subplot to this story. And as a visual novel, right, you can sort of, it's like a choose your own adventure. So you could, depending on how you answer questions or what you say, the story changes, right? And you get a different outcome. But it's essentially a dating sim. So, you know, you interact with these characters and what you say has an effect. What you say reveals different, H scenes. That's the gist. That's the gist of it. I was inspired by the film Eyes Wide Shut. I've watched Stanley Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut, and I thought, oh, I've got to make a story like this one, where it's ambiguous, where you don't really know what's happening, but you're sure of it. You're certain of what's happening, but you can't prove it. I really like that feeling, and I wanted to convey that feeling in a story. And again, yeah, I had this image for these funny characters who are gossiping about you, and you know, you meet this girl and she has a penis, and it's like, hey, it's that kind of thing.
Is it completed now?
Yeah, well, it's completed. Yeah, so the end, or one of the endings, is like very abrupt. Basically, I just kind of, okay, after the age scenes, I was like, okay, this is enough. This was fun. But it's a cute story, and the animations, some of the animations included in the age scenes are you can see them on Burag. They're pretty neat. I think they turned out really well. It was the first time I tried animating and with the sort of painterly style. Yeah, it looks quite unique. I added a sort of compression filter to it, so everything's sort of pixelated. I did this so that they would, in a way, standardize the art, because not very consistent with the design of the characters. So I sort of, what should I say, sort of distorted it with sort of compressed filter, and so everything looks like it belongs in the same universe that way.
Nice.
Now, speaking of OCs, have you created OCs or thought of them in your work?
Sure. God, I don't even take it as seriously as some of the other artists on Broad, or like earlier on when I started posting on Broad, I thought, okay, well, these are going to be my characters, and I'll just dress them up in different ways. And you know, they all have the same kind of image, but like DDD Chan is the sort of muse or the thrust behind this project. And this character was inspired by like the young girl, like flirty young girls, the flirty young girl energy, you know. How else to say it? Sometimes she's Japanese, sometimes she's other ethnicities, you know. It's nothing, there's nothing consistent with what I do. Again, the only thing I take seriously is like the process of making the image. That's something I really take seriously. But the DVD Chen project itself is kind of a mishmash of different media and different ideas.
Nice. Is there anything you want to say or advice to give on the process that you undergo for your art?
It's a sort of flow state. It's just a way that I can relax and unwind. Often, you know, when I'm making art for DVD Chan, it's like I'm making a painting with one or two layers and I'm using one brush. I'm not a very complicated person. I'm a simpleton, okay? So I open up a blank canvas that's like 4,000 squared pixels and I just start painting. You know, some artists, I don't want to like name drop, but like some artists have seen their process and they have like 100 layers. They keep everything separate. They're using all kinds of masks and like different screen layers and doing all kinds of things, like, you know, in addition to the post-processing, maybe they're integrating 3D. I'm not like that. I'm very simple. I just start sketching and I think, oh, I like how the sketch is going. I'm going to paint. I'm going to add some color to it now. So I use a paintbrush with like a very heavy smear mode. That's that. Yeah.
So you would say when you're doing the process of the image, you prefer a more simple, straightforward thing. Is that because it helps you with kind of your, like you said, your flow? And in other words, if you have an idea or you're thinking of an idea, it's much easier when you've just got one or two layers to work with.
Yeah, that's right. There's nothing in the way. And I just get into sort of tunnel vision and I start putting things down. I think I work best in that manner. It's more intuition for me. I just do what I do sort of intuitively. And I'm very influenced by the way I used to paint. We used to make oil paintings, and best way to do it is to just get working. And just get working and work as quickly as possible. Sometimes the image looks more confident, I think. If you work very quickly, with digital media you have like stabilization, but I know if you're doing traditional media, quick movements look better. They just look better, and they look more confident and decisive, and that's, the viewer likes that. Anyway, that carried over into my digital work. That quick production process, yeah.
Has working in traditional media like oil painting, do you think that has helped you become more of like when you're working in a digital piece, you have a more decisive, like just like, I'm going to do it this way and I'm committing to it, as opposed to, you know, maybe being like, well, I'm not so sure if I want to do it this way or that way. Because like you said, in the digital realm, you can always undo or make numerous layers, things like that. Do you think that the doing the oil-based painting and the traditional way of working has actually kind of, you said it did influence your digital work. So is that kind of one aspect to how it's influenced you?
Definitely. And digital has influenced my oil painting also, because with digital, you can sort of prototype things and you can sort of test things out before you try them. So they help each other, right? All these different media help each other, like help you develop your skills using that media. Everything kind of blends together. I look at that sort of like glass half full, actually, because there are a lot of benefits to working with this media in terms of trying to express what you want to express. Because say for example, the blending modes with digital media, maybe there's some software out that they can do this, but most painting software, like when you blend two colors together, say blue and yellow, you don't get a grain, you get a gray. Okay, so the digital is kind of a parlor trick that doesn't, it's not like you're actually mixing colors. Yeah, so that's something to think about when you're making digital media, is that actually, and it can be a kind of a shock, like when you're using digital for a long time, then you go back to traditional meeting, like, oh damn, I made a grain out of these two. But it's really like that. Okay, but in terms of moving decisively, I like to have a mixture, a combination of both the viewers looking at this image, and the image is made of decisive brush strokes, and also sort of wandering, kind of laborious strokes, indecisive strokes. A combination of those two, I think, are really neat. I think it comes down to your taste, right? But I like the blend of confidence and bold strokes with gradients and like labor. You know, we can see the labor, like, so for example, like pointillism is a style that just involves putting down dots, right? And all the dots combine to make values and shapes, right? That's labor. That is super laborious, right? You're just sitting there poking this image with your pen or whatever. And in contrast to like a bravura style, which is, you know, like imagine John Singer Sargent, right? Is all bravura, you know, one stroke. If all it takes is one stroke, you'll just put down one stroke, right? So like a combination of those two in the same image, because the bold strokes lead the eyes in different ways. And the sort of indecisive areas, the sort of laborious areas are kind of like your resting zone, or like that's where you sort of meditate. I don't know how else to say it. That's where you can stop and sort of unwind. Actually, the same rule applies for color too. Like sort of high chroma or high saturation colors are very exciting and very fast or violent, and more muted colors are going to have you relax or relax your eyes. And if you have a gradient, you know, gradients are just pleasant. Like people love gradients. They're relaxing, they're soothing gradients. So, you know, to have a combination of these different things, like hard edges, soft edges, gradients, or to have a combination of these things, it works well together. The combine, like an orchestra.
In other words, like things, when the art piece isn't too uniform, it draws more interest.
Yeah, variety. And I think going back to the strokes, like having bold strokes with little wandering strokes, that's a big statement, right? That's a big statement you're making, because the viewer kind of knows what kind of artist you are at that point. They think, okay, well, sometimes you're decisive, but sometimes you don't know where you're going, or you don't know what you're doing, right? And that's, I think that's a really kind of beautiful juxtaposition, I think.
Oh yeah, it's almost like you're looking into the mind of the artist, or...
Of course, that's all it is. That's all it comes down to. That's all it is.
Yep.
Artists produce, the image they make contains what is important to them. That's all they're doing. They're trying to show you what's important.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to show you their identity in their art.
Every single post on Broad is doing this, yeah. That's my take.
Now, I remember when you were asking me like how you define a lolly, was it because you also enjoy like teenage girls in your art that are young but not necessarily prepubescent? Yeah, I was wondering about that.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I'm pretty basic pervert. I'm sort of like a run-of-the-mill kind of pervert guy. Sure, yeah, teenage girls are perfect, right? That's, what can I say about that? Yeah, no, I draw all kinds of different things that, except Prairie is not something I've ever been into. I don't know what that world is like, but I've done one furry commission before, which was a lot of fun and a bit challenging. Not exactly my wheelhouse, but I would like to draw more furry just for fun.
Oh, that'll be interesting. Is your furry art on your gallery in Brugge? Oh, actually, yeah, I see it right now. Actually, it's like what looks like Sonic characters, possibly.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, something I must have made like 3 years ago. Yeah,
I like it pretty good. It has lots of personality.
Yeah, the commissioner, they wanted like a banner or a background, and so that's why it's so horizontal and so spacious. It's like a background banner image.
What kind of anthro character or furry character, if you could create like them more, is there any kind of like type of animal that you'd be like, oh man, I kind of want to see how I could anthropomorphize them?
I kind of like these sea creature characters. I drew a Mutio. Do you know this anime character from a very strange anime called Blue Submarine Number 6? And it contains this mermaid character called Mutio. I sort of like the mermaid character, the mermaid idea. Also like, who's the character, the Zora character in Ocarina of Time? Anyway, I think I like the slick skin idea. I think that's kind of cool. So like a fishy character, maybe more my kind of anthro.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Fur is not very sexy to me. So yeah, I'm not drawn to it.
Interestingly enough, though, I think usually people put fish anthros under the furry category still. It might be closer to scaly, perhaps, but I think scaly is usually thought of to be like reptiles or like lizards or dragons or something.
Right. Yeah. I mean, right. They would be scaly characters. Yeah. I don't often think about anthro or like monster girls. I sort of lean into the Lolita, like Joji Fuku, Harajuku kind of Ikeshita style, with lots of sort of opulent, but not in the way like anime has become, you know, like early 2000s kind of, yeah, Joji Fuku kind of style where the Lolita maid kind of look with pastel colors, sort of things of that nature. Platform shoes and bracelets and chokers and things like that are pretty sexy. They're fun to draw. They're just really fun to draw on these characters. Yeah.
So if people want to find you, like, where are your accounts located? Like, what sites?
Barog and Pixiv, and maybe someone else has created an account for me somewhere else. I don't know. But if you find DVD Chan, it's my brand, and so you kind of know what to expect. And a Google search will probably take you to Pixiv. Yeah, DVD Chan.
And the primary way that people can support you is through Fanbox, you said? Like, that's the biggest one for supporting?
That's right, yeah, Fanbox, yeah. I keep it pretty low-key. I don't really want to scale this project to where I could get... Well, if you want it, come and get it. That's all I can say. DVD Chan.
Well, and is that game Greeny also on your Fanbox?
Oh, I could make it available in Fanbox. It's on itch.io, and I use a different moniker. Although maybe DVD Chen's written somewhere, but he's a different moniker, Alpha Jerk. It's like, okay, what's your studio name? Alpha Jerk. Yeah, itch.io. You can find Greeny under a not suitable for work tag. That's certainly not for everybody. Again, I do a lot of different things, sometimes homosexual, sometimes lowly, sometimes dick girl, sometimes I don't have a one thing that I do.
Like a variety of stuff.
Yeah, a variety of stuff, yeah. Which is cool. Probably going to be more of a problem than anything, but yeah.
A lot of people like different stuff too. A lot of people on the brag are people who might be interested in your art. They might like that you have variety and it's not just lollies.
Yeah.
You might have some older girls, you might have some femboys or boys, whatever it is.
No, in general, that's right. Most of my followers, they like what I'm doing regardless. They're just sort of interested. There's more than anything, they're interested in what I'm doing. And I think they're excited to see what comes next a lot of times.
That's cool. I'm glad you have such following.
Oh, yeah. And I really appreciate it, the support.
Yeah. So thank you for being on, DV. That was very fascinating. Very fascinating insight to the art process and your thoughts on art, as well as the insight on like what kind of art you make as well.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you very much. Great to have you.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.